The craft of writing. You learn to do something by doing it. Writing is no different. You learn to write by producing a certain number of words on a regular basis. You learn to become an author by rewriting. You are the author of your life story and your written story. Some reflections as we talk about the craft of writing. Consider what you do uniquely well. Consider who your audience is. In setting goals, be clear about three things. What do your readers need from you? What do you want to offer them? What are the things you understand that you want to convey to the reader? Understand your motivation for publishing. 12 and counting. 1. Disseminate your knowledge, experience, and message to readers. 2. A gift to clients. 3. As a gift to other offerings, or as an ebook used as a bonus to sign up for your newsletter or blog. 4. To publish with a traditional house using an agent to establish national presence as an author. 5. Make money by selling your book yourself. 6. Use your book to make money. 7. Establish yourself as an expert. 8. Use the book to enhance your client base. 9. A springboard for seminars, workshops, presentations, or retreats. 10. Develop mastermind groups or discussion groups using your book. 11. Leave a legacy. Here's how the dedication of one such book, A Memoir on Parenting, sounds. To Ryan and Lauren, I hope there will be a time when you will find at least some of this book interesting, though if I have done a good job of parenting, not revealing anything new. I can't know whether or if it will be tomorrow or a dozen years of tomorrows from now. Know that whenever it is, I will be loving you. May you walk through all your days with love remembered and love renewed. Dad. That's from Making Memories. I'll use it later as an example of one publishing option. 12. Writers publish because they want to make a difference in people's lives. Tom Stoppard, the British playwright, said, "Words are sacred. They deserve respect. If you get the right ones in the right order, you can nudge the world a little." Voice. Definite voice is conversational voice. The writer gives us a sense that we are listening to an empathic storyteller, a skilled raconteur, rather than simply looking at words on paper. This is different than just following the simple advice, write the way you talk. Voice involves more than accurate transcription. A true essence of conversation comes from attentive listening and from dedicated revision. Transcribing talk is not writing, but it is a technique to cultivate voice. Some writers speak into recording devices to let their voices flow and hear themselves at the same time. Others may read their words out loud, recasting a word or sentence that doesn't sound quite right. When Barbara McClintock was awarded a Nobel Prize for her study of gene transposition in corn plants, a striking aspect was that she made her discoveries by listening to what the corn spoke to her. She described respecting the life and presence of the corn and letting it come. She said she learned the stories of the plants. She heard them. She watched their daily green journeys of growth and came to know the plants in the way a healer or mystic would have known them, from the inside, by hearing the inner voices of the corn speaking to her as another being. Even in previously contributing to the psychoanalytic literature on empathy as a scientific way of listening, it never occurred to me that an ear of corn had much to say. I think if I mused out loud to a colleague that some vegetables were talking to me, he'd have called the guys in the white coats. I want to give you an idea of voice by getting you to just listen to a short passage from the perspective of voice. I think you'll hear it immediately. I used this passage as a preface for my last book as a psychoanalyst, Integrating Body Self and Psychological Self. The passage is from Anatoly Broillard's Intoxicated by My Illness. My ideal doctor, I can imagine entering my condition, looking around it from the inside like an ideal landlord with a tenant, trying to see how he could make the premises more livable. He would look around, holding me by the hand, and he would figure out what it is like to be me. Then he would try to find certain advantages in the situation. He can turn disadvantages into advantages. He would see the genius of my illness. He would mingle his demon with mine. We would wrestle with my fate together like Rupert and Birkin in the library in D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love. I would also like a doctor who enjoyed me. I want to be a good story for him, to give him some of my art in exchange for his. This also happens to fit my philosophy of coaching. There are some other examples of voice in the addendum. Design every part of your book. Write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. Write a title, 5 words or less, that tells and sells. Write a subtitle, the promise, the benefits described. Envision the audience. What is your aha, your good news? What will your book do uniquely well? Write a 7 to 9 word mission statement for your book, the hub, the hottest undeniable benefit of your book. Review your silver bullet. Keep it handy and visible. If you write a query letter, there are 4 parts: lead, body, bio, and close. And the book proposal. Let's talk about the nonfiction book proposal. Why is this important, even if you don't plan to submit it to a traditional publishing house? The book proposal is the business plan of your book. You need to know where you're going, goals and strategies. Setting a goal will enhance motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. The end should be in mind from the beginning. Lewis Carroll said it well. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" responded the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." Develop an organizing idea with a substantial center. What's your book about? Why does it exist? You'll communicate both these notions again and again in various ways throughout your book. The title, the subtitle, the headline sentences, the chapter titles all fit a brand, the essence of your book. The nonfiction book proposal is a tool to help you organize and elaborate your concept of a book. Another purpose is that the proposal tells the publisher about your book, why it's important, why you're the one to write it, and why it will be successful. A good book starts with a good idea. The book's merit should address these primary issues. Why would someone want to read your book? Who is your target audience? What is your unique hook? Can the hook and the message support an entire book? What will I be telling my readers that they don't already know? First, title and subtitle. The title should not contain more than 5 words. The reason? A longer title requires the reader to think instead of feel. The title should create a motivating visualization. We know that more people think in pictures and learn in a visual way than in an auditory or kinesthetic way. The title should not trigger negative images or a negative focus. Neuroscience teaches us that we get what we focus on, not what we want. The focus should be positive, not the avoidance of something negative. The title should pass the airplane test. This is my personally devised test that came to me spontaneously when a publisher called me and asked if I would do a blurb for the dust jacket of a book. I asked him the title of the book. When he told me, I said I'd be happy to review the book if it had a different title, but that one doesn't pass the airplane test. He said, "What's an airplane test?" I said, "If I'm sitting on an airplane and someone sees the book I'm reading, I don't want to be embarrassed by the title." Now, the unspoken continuation of that statement is, or feel stupid, or I have somebody look at me like I have the pathology the book title promises remedy for. He thanked me, had the author change the title, and sent me a nice bound galley to review. I also have a subtest for titles that may pass the coach class test but aren't quite ready for the first class section. An example would be the AIG Bonus Investment Guide. And there are exceptions to everything. Here's one exception to the 5 words or less for a title. It's a bestseller by child and adolescent psychologist Dr. Anthony Wolfe. "Get out of my life, but first could you drop me and Cheryl off at the mall?" 2. The overview. A gripping overview of your book, 1 to 2 pages in length, communicates what your book is about and shows the essential worth and marketability of a book. That is, that it's really a book rather than a magazine article or a newspaper story. The overview should be a clear, concise statement consisting of 4 aspects: what the book is about, why it should be written, how you'll write it, why you're the best person to write it. 3. Markets. This section should contain information about who will buy your book, who you're writing the book for, why the book should exist, and your strategy to sell it. 4. The competition. The competition section spells out your research of the assessment of the viability of your proposal, the competition, the complementary books, and how you support the idea of the book's existence. 5. Promotion. What you'll do to help your book sell. This promotion section emphasizes your plan for book sales and the support for your book that you will provide. What you will do to sell and promote your book, as well as the specifics of the following: regional and national presentations, perhaps a publicist, faculty or consultant positions with network promotion, your memberships with marketing impact, electronic or regular mail contacts, collaborative and promotional partners, affiliate arrangements, for example, interviews for your book release, articles available in e-zine banks. 6. Author background. Emphasize your background and experience as it relates to the book. 7. Chapter outline. This section, its organization and persuasion, is crucial. It should contain a table of contents and a chapter-by-chapter outline with chapter abstracts. The chapter-by-chapter outline consists of a synopsis of each chapter, as little as 2 to 3 paragraphs, maybe up to a page each. These chapter abstracts allow you to show what you can do without having to write the book. It's your blueprint for the book. 8. The sample chapter. The sample chapter, usually chapter 1, simply proves that you can do the job. Engage the reader from the first sentence. Look at some of the recent nonfiction bestsellers: Blink, Outliers, Freakonomics, Predictably Irrational, Social Intelligence. Chapter 1 in each begins with a story. A powerful story that engages and captures the essence of the book's message. This nonfiction book proposal usually runs anywhere from 20 to 40 pages plus the sample chapter. The book proposal is not just a sales tool for the writer, It's an essential teaching tool for the writer. It's your game plan, your superstructure. This book proposal serves as a map for you because it requires you to understand the meaning of your book and articulate what the book is about. It requires you to think about why you're the person to write it and why anyone would be interested in it. These are the demands that you should already be placing on yourself when you first consider writing a book. In fact, the first month or two of creating your book may be about investigating your idea and writing your book proposal. The 7 Habits of Successful Writers. 1. Create a specific plan, including your schedule for writing. Stick with it no matter what. Sometimes one of the most important things in life, as well as in writing, is to be sure that you show up. This schedule is simply a writing plan that does not have to be detailed or onerous, but it may look like some version of one of these possibilities. I'll write for 2 hours, 5 days a week between 8 to 10 p.m. I'll draft 500 words of writing each day for 5 days a week. I'll create 2 chunks a week. I will create an outline of the book by fill in the date. I will create an annotated outline by fill in the date. Focus on a specific, simple action, a plan that sets up the best potential for your effectiveness and mastery. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always one thing you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. As I met with him each week, I glanced at the photograph until finally, toward the end of the year, I asked him about it. "Look carefully," he said. "What do you see?" I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help. "Steve, the only thing I notice is that there's only one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture." He nodded. "That's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing that you can have in focus and see clearly," which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 2. When you write, write. Don't combine writing and editing. Writing and editing are 2 different mindsets, 2 different states of mind. You cannot do both at the same time. Different parts of the brain are involved. Plan each. And you already know not to combine writing with gossip about American Idol. 3. Take one step at a time. Have a small, specific, definable goal. Write in small bursts. The first draft may be done at various times, bit by bit, and maybe a compilation of several stacks of pages from various times. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope, a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and hop. He managed about 24 miles a day and completed his run in 143 days. After he finished the race and was interviewed, he was asked how he kept himself going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead. His response, "I just kept running to the next telephone pole." 4 is a reiteration. Find your most efficient way of writing and stick to it, whether that's the computer, handwritten on a yellow pad, or dictated and later transcribed. Do what fits your learning and creativity style. Also, pay attention to when your best time of the day is for creative processes like writing, and when your best time of the day is for more objective work like editing. Pay attention to your biorhythms. In Texas, we call this, it's easier to ride a horse in the direction he's going. 5. Read your work out loud. This can be a very effective editing process and way of listening on another level. If possible, join a writer's group to hear your work and other work read by others. 6. Do adequate research. Effective writers know that good research is about pursuing questions and information of themselves as well as of books, websites, reports, and interviews. Search for Google Alerts. Type in the specific topic you're interested in. Neuroscience of coaching, money psychology, behavioral economics. Abstracts and links are then sent to your email box from the world literature on a daily basis. 7. Read the writing of others. We learn by reading. Read what instructs as well as what stimulates. Read from related fields. Stretch yourself. You'll find your own best balance for reading and writing. The top 6 mistakes successful writers avoid. 1. Avoid passive sentence construction. As you reread and edit your work, convert passive to active verbs and action language whenever possible. 2. Strive to be clear, specific, simple, and humane. Those are the 4 qualities of good writing that William Zinsser talks about in The Art of Writing. That's in the references in the addendum. Significant work goes into keeping it simple and making it look easy. Again, keep the burden of the clarity of communication. Don't shift it to the reader or listener. 3. Show, don't tell your audience to keep them interested. Tell stories and use metaphors. Telling stories, which is right brain, and then pointing out the lesson of the story, left brain, engages both parts of the brain for balanced learning. People accept ideas more readily when their minds are in story mode as opposed to a more analytical mindset. Show, don't tell. Melville didn't write a story about whaling. He wrote of a unique drama between one guy and one fish. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. James Watson, the guy who discovered DNA with Crick, said, "You know, I can remember something when I fit it into a story." A story is a system for holding together facts. A story makes things make sense. Lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Muriel Rukeyser said, "The world is made up of stories, not atoms." 4. Keep the I to a minimum in order to acknowledge and engage your reader. 5. Lose the jargon and fancy phrases. Hemingway believed that 1 to 2 syllable words worked better than longer ones. Don't impress your audience with your intellect, vocabulary, or research. Your reader wants a savvy friend who explains things in a down-to-earth way who also happens to be an expert. 6. Be a good storyteller. When you carefully craft a speech or tell a story, the art is to allow the emotional response to reside in the listener or reader. Rather than expressing yourself or telling what the receiver's reaction should be, you facilitate the reader having the experience. We can learn from the poets who give it to the reader or listener to experience themselves. One of the people I studied storytelling with told of an experience he had going through the airport in Chicago. A woman stopped him to say how much she enjoyed his presentation, how it had stayed with her from 4 years ago. He asked her to remind him what he had talked about. She said, "Oh, I don't remember what you talked about, but I'll always remember that story you told." Chunking exercises. Chunk is a piece of writing about the size of a newspaper column that looks at a single subject. Exercise 1. Write a single chunk. Treat the single subject in a complete, self-contained way. This might be an anecdote, vignette, exercise, description of an event, complete thought, or case study. It should be on the subject related to your book. Exercise 2. Write 4 more chunks. You will see the chunks as building blocks for nonfiction books. Exercise 3. Fit your chunks into the outline. See what the chunks illuminate or describe to further a section of a specific chapter of your book. 4. Plan a month of writing. After you've written 5 chunks and fit them into outline, you may want to revise your outline. After revision, select the next chunk to write. For these, you'll be more aware of what you want to write, and you can make a writing schedule. Important areas of focus for the serious writer. A mission statement of your book. In business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and provide meaning to your daily activities. It adds focus and commitment to what you're doing. Consider the mission statement for your book. A mission statement contains 4 elements: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Ideals are the core values that motivate and guide you, that define what's important to you that you'll convey in the book. Purpose, simply what you wish to accomplish, the benefits the reader will get that are consistent with the ideals. Strategy, the art and science of a plan of action. This has to do with how you'll conceive, craft, and deliver your book. Goals. Effective goals are those that are SMART, the acronym Specific, Measurable, Attainable, Realistic, and Time-Bound. Create a mission statement for yourself as a writer. It can guide you. It can remind you what you are meant to do. This can become a compass to guide your story to completion and to fulfillment. Write it down. Look at it each time before you begin writing. I'll share mine. To inspire and guide people to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Continuing important areas of focus. 2. A business plan for your book. This is the book proposal. 3. A timetable. A calendar of completion of each aspect of your book. 4. A daily schedule. 5. Your writing office. The space of your own, as Virginia Woolf emphasized. 6. Your tools. Adequate support from computer to business stationery and cards. Books, references, magazines, perhaps, related to your writing. 7. Continuing education in writing, in your subject matter, and in marketing. 8. Consider joining a writer's group. The huge leaps forward I have made have been by attending 2 writer's groups at the University of Iowa. In those, I learned as much from the other participants as I did the writer who coordinated the groups. At a University of Houston imprint series, we did something that I subsequently have incorporated into the boot camp for writers that I do periodically. To hear your writing read by someone else, because you can't tell the reader where to pause or use a certain inflection. It's hugely beneficial to hear it read by someone else. Your belief systems. If you want to change your life, first change your mind. How do you do an inventory of beliefs that may be limiting or compromising? Analogous to impressionistic painting, each of your experiences is a dab of paint on a pointillist canvas. Only when you step back and view the entire picture do you recognize that the points form a pattern of a particular segment of life, and that the segments have their own unity. You create each experience, the patterns, and the composite image. Each is at a different level of awareness. You're always free to change your mind, always free to change your beliefs and core assumptions about who and what you are. Remember, you heard yourself say 3 times out loud, you're always free to change your mind. Changing your mind not only alters your brain, but also transforms your life. But first, you have to be aware. Prediction and expectation based on the past creates repetition, but based on the present and future creates possibilities. A belief system constructs an obstacle or an opportunity. Consider this. What you seek is camouflaged in what you fear. Show me an obstacle, and I'll show you a desire. For example, show me clutter, and I'll show you blocked energy that desires release. We always create the outside to match the inside. The secret here is that an obstacle is the unconscious mnemonic of desire. It reminds you of what you want, but makes it safe to want if you're afraid. I saw a cartoon of a dog straining at its leash, barking relentlessly at a cat as if to say, "Just let me at him." The cat wasn't too shabby and actually looked pretty mean. It was at least as big as the dog. All of a sudden, in the middle of a ferocious bark, the leash snapped, so the dog was free to go after the cat. He looked astonished, scared to death. He ran back, quickly grabbed the leash, tied a triple knot. Then he could again safely strain at the leash and bark his ferocious, "Just let me at him." Here's the point. When you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, for example, "I can't find time to write," reflect on the underlying desire. When you're ready to consider that you create the obstacle, you're also ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. Imagine what it would be like not to create your obstacles. Whatever you think, feel, and experience is what you create each moment.